iHeart Podcasts.
Guess what, Mango?
What's that, Will?
Do you hear about this super pizza they invented in England a couple years ago? I was just reading about it again.
No, but I did get a note from a very sweet listener asking me to stop using the word super so much. And I was thinking for today's episode, I'd just use the word top-notch instead. So tell me about this top-notch pizza.
That's a good word, Mango. Well, super pizza was developed at Glasgow University, and it's this frozen pizza that has seaweed baked into the crust, and then the sauce is boosted with nutrients. And the whole idea is that because it has a third of your daily vitamins and minerals, you could actually eat pizza for breakfast, lunch, and dinner and be somewhat healthy.
That's pretty cool. But how's it taste?
Well, I guess top notch, as you might say. But now, I think like pretty good from what I've read online. Anyway, reading about it made me wonder if you had to pare your pantry down to the bare minimum, what are the only foods you'd need to survive? And that's what today's episode is all about. Hey there, podcast listeners. Welcome to Part-Time Genius. I'm Will Pearson, and as always, I'm joined by my good friend Mangesh Hatikader. And sitting behind that soundproof booth, baking some tiny but delicious pastries in his easy-bake oven is our producer, Tristan McNeil. Where did he get that?
What is that, Tristan? Are those tiny croissants? Yeah, listener, those are tiny croissants.
I want a tiny croissant. That looks so good. All right, well, for today's show, we decided to do a little thought experiment. Basically, we want to know if you were going to limit your daily diet to only a handful of different foods, 10 or 5 or even just one, what should you eat?
Yeah, I was pretty sure the answer was going to be Flaming Hot Cheetos, but apparently the answer is not Flaming Hot Cheetos.
I don't think it is, yeah.
Because this really isn't what snacks you couldn't go without so much as the stuff you couldn't live without. Plus, 3 times a day Cheetos habit couldn't be that healthy for you.
Probably not. And, you know, I think the idea here is to concentrate on building the most restricted diet we can, using foods that are nutritious enough to actually keep you alive. And along the way, we'll explore the reasons why some people actually strive for a lack of variety in what they eat. And we'll also take a look at some of the craziest restrictive diets that people have ever subjected themselves to.
Speaking of which, we'll also be joined by Andrew Taylor. He's the Australian man who declared 2016 to be the year of the spud. And then he commemorated it by eating nothing but potatoes for 366 days.
Oh, and he chose a leap year to do this, huh?
Yeah. And now he's written a book called The DIY Spud Fit Challenge. And it dares readers to change their relationship with food in order to live a healthier life. So We'll find out what possessed him to do this in the first place and why potatoes of all things.
I mean, it's so weird. I feel like growing up, potatoes were considered a healthy vegetable or at least healthy enough. And then there was the whole anti-car movement and this big push to cut potatoes out entirely. And now it feels like it's sort of nudging its way back in.
I know. It's so weird how these things go back and forth. Like, eggs are the same way with all their cholesterol and that debate. And it's just so strange, like, that we can't decide to just do this in moderation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the strange part is it almost feels heretical to be talking about limiting our food selection. I mean, we've mentioned this before, but Americans have never had such a huge variety of options as we do today. And the idea of purposefully removing choices, it kind of runs counter to most people's thinking.
Yeah, so I know this isn't food related, but for a while I was enamored with this idea of having a daily uniform. My mother-in-law gave me this book she was reading about willpower. And in it, there's this argument that you only have so much willpower and decision-making power in a day. Mm-hmm. And so people like Obama, when he was president, supposedly had someone pick out his clothes for him. And all of his shirts and pants were different colors, but the same style and the size he liked. The idea being, if you're not using your brain power for any of those smaller decisions, you can actually save it for making swift, important decisions later in the day.
Huh.
But I know a number of successful people who just have one basic lunch they rely on, and whether that's like a turkey sandwich or a PB&J.
Or ramen from downstairs.
Yeah, and they just eat that every day because it's something they like enough, but don't have to spend any time thinking about.
Yeah, and, you know, time and efficiency, that's definitely one aspect of narrowing your food choices. But another that I've been thinking about is, you know, space travel.
How's that?
Well, according to PopSci, quote, the impetus of a lot of nutritional science is, how do we feed people in space? And so a lot of the effort is on how to pack more nutritional content into lighter weight foods, you know, that are easy to carry.
Well, we'll definitely talk a little bit about food science and the efforts to pack foods with more nutrients. And, of course, there's also this trend of mono diets where people eat from just one food group. And even just one particular food, People do this with bananas or watermelon, or in the magician Penn Jillette's case, he did this with potatoes as well. And it's supposedly to shock his body into weight loss.
I have to say, though, it just sounds so miserable. But I mean, I guess there are all sorts of ways to eat a potato. And he's probably not just eating baked potatoes all day. At least I hope he's not.
I don't know. I wonder how many people were inspired by The Martian to do this diet. But when I first heard you mention this topic and this idea of foods you can't live without, it reminded me of that German poet and philosopher Friedrich Schiller. And he'd keep rotting apples in a drawer in his desk. And whenever he was getting writer's block, he'd open the drawer to take a whiff. Supposedly, it inspired him to keep writing.
I'd never heard that before.
I know. And then there's like Balzac, who had 50 cups of coffee a day to keep him writing. But do you have any tricks for writer's block?
I don't actually think I do. What about you?
Well, it's not a trick, but I actually hate writing. So whenever I have to do it, I often get like a bag of jelly beans as a treat just to make the experience seem more fun. Mm-hmm. But I know I took us off track. Nutritionists definitely warn against mono diets, but sometimes that dieting can't be helped.
So what do you mean by that?
Well, it can also be psychological. Like there was a story a few years ago about that teenage girl in England who'd been hooked on chicken nuggets. She'd been downing them since like age 2 or something. And according to the report, she'd eaten practically nothing but chicken nuggets for like 15 years.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I remember hearing about her.
I know. And it sounds kind of funny or impressive even, until one day she passed out and couldn't breathe.
That's a lot less funny. So did she have a heart attack or something?
No, apparently she was so malnourished that she had to receive vitamin and nutrient injections.
Wow. I mean, it's actually kind of heartbreaking when you think about it.
I know. And the sadder part is that her mother couldn't even stop her. Like, her words were, quote, it breaks my heart to see her eating those damn nuggets.
You know, what you're describing sounds way more than just a hankering for chicken nuggets. I mean, it actually sounds more like compulsive behavior.
Mm-hmm. And in some cases, people are like highly selective about foods they're willing to eat because of food addictions. But it can also be about food phobias. In fact, there was this other British woman who ate only chicken nuggets for 25 years.
Wait, she was also British? What's with the Brits and their nuggets?
I have no idea. But in this woman's case, she became so accustomed to eating her favorite food at home that she developed this serious fear of eating anything else. Like, when she'd put it in her mouth, she'd gag. But after visiting a hypnotherapist in London for a single hour, just an hour, she was totally cured, and she's been feasting on a non-nugget diet ever since.
I'm so happy she's off the nuggets. All right, so this is obvious, but in general, it sounds like eating only one kind of food is a very bad idea.
I mean, I guess it works for pets. Ruby has this pet bearded dragon at school that apparently only eats crickets, and it seems to be doing just fine. But you're right. I mean, part of the problem is that like, there are huge parts of the world population, especially in Africa and Asia, and they survive on a diet that's made up almost entirely of rice, so it's not really by choice. And in fact, according to a report from the ETH University in Zurich, and I'm pulling this up now, quote, nearly every second person in the world eats primarily rice to meet the daily calorie need. A meal of rice stops the hunger, but contains only very few or none of the essential micronutrients. So, I mean, the good news is that researchers have had lots of success with creating genetically modified multinutrient rice to help fight malnutrition, especially in those rice-dependent regions.
You know, I know there are economic and political implications of the genetically modified food stuff, but it is kind of amazing that you can just infuse all these nutrients into rice and solve this big problem. Of course, whether someone chooses a restricted diet or has it thrust upon them, that lack of dinner table variety poses other problems, you know, aside from the nutrition of it all. And mainly that just makes meals seem so boring, really.
Yeah, I mean, that's my biggest gripe with all of this.
And that's not just our opinion. I mean, humans actually experience a phenomenon called sensory-specific satiety. And that's when we keep eating the same thing.
So I've never heard of that. What's that mean?
You know, so basically, the more you eat of a specific food, the less appetizing it gets, and the less you can stand the thought of eating it.
Which explains why kids always complain when they're full midway through dinner, but then miraculously find more room in their stomachs when dessert rolls around.
That's exactly what's happening there. And researchers think sensory-specific satiety might be an evolutionary trait. You know, it acts as the body's way of telling us to eat something different in order to avoid that malnutrition. But of course, you don't have to stick to just a single food item to suffer the effects of this. Even, you know, limiting yourself to one food group can be unhealthy. And I mean, just look at the fruitarians out there.
So I grew up vegetarian, but I remember when I heard about fruitarians thinking, that feels like a step too far.
I would agree with that. Well, it's definitely a more extreme form of vegetarianism. And the idea is that 75% or more of your daily food intake should be fresh fruit and usually eaten raw. And health and wellness bloggers have helped popularize the diet in recent years, so much so that hundreds of like-minded eaters now gather every year in New York for the Woodstock Fruit Festival.
The other Woodstock.
I think it's probably just a little bit different than the other Woodstock. So it's this week-long event where fruitarians gather to mingle with other fruitarians. They attend lectures and gorge themselves on the all-you-can-eat fruit and vegetable buffet. You know, and that's what they get for their $1,200 ticket.
What?
Yeah, it's crazy. And if you're wondering how much fresh produce it takes to feed close to 1,000 hungry fruitarians for an entire week, the answer is over 100,000 pounds.
That's so much fruit. So wasn't Steve Jobs a fruitarian? I feel like I read that somewhere. And also that he smelled terrible. I don't know if that was because of how his body reacted to the fruits or because he didn't use any deodorants.
Well, I can't confirm why he smelled, but Jobs was probably the most famous fruitarian in the world. And he kept a strict vegan diet for most of his life, went through stints along the way where he would only drink smoothies and eat raw fruit, just that kind of strict diet.
And I guess it all makes sense in hindsight, right? Like, it's right there in the company name.
Well, you may be kidding about this, but it's actually true. So Jobs came up with the name Apple Computers during one of his fruitarian phases.
What?
Yeah, it says it in his biography. He wrote, "I had just come back from the Apple farm. It sounded fun, spirited, and not intimidating. Apple took the edge off the word computer."
That's so crazy. Like, I always just assumed the Apple was a reference to Isaac Newton.
Yeah.
Although, didn't all that fruit actually wind up contributing to Steve Jobs' illness? Like, I'm pretty sure I read somewhere that there's a higher risk of pancreatic cancer if you consume a lot of fruits and juices.
Well, some studies have definitely shown a strong link, but of course there's no real way of knowing what brought on Steve's illness.
Mm-hmm.
And diet can definitely play a role, but it's hardly the deciding factor with something like cancer. That said, when Ashton Kutcher took on the role of Steve Jobs for that biopic, Kutcher adhered to a fruitarian diet for about a month as a way of getting into character. But apparently it was a disaster, and he ended up being rushed to the hospital with stomach pains, you know, just a couple days before filming began. And the test found that his pancreas levels were way off what they should have been, which really is kind of frightening given how Jobs passed away.
And it's kind of counterintuitive, right? Like, to think of something we equate with such health being bad for you. I guess it's just another win for, like, boring old moderation.
Yeah, you know, you're definitely not going to find most doctors or dietitians that recommend you take up fruitarianism or any other highly restrictive diet. And a good general rule of thumb for diets is that, you know, if it's making you sick, it's probably a bad diet.
That's great advice. But vegetarians swear off fish and meat, and they tend to be pretty healthy in general. How come we can get away with dodging some food groups but not others?
Well, we tend to aim for varied diets because that gives us a better chance of getting all the different nutrients we need to help our bodies function properly. And cutting out whole food groups lessens that likelihood to different degrees. So eliminating meat is one thing. I mean, you can make up the protein in other ways. But eliminating everything except meat, I mean, honestly, that would be about as dangerous as the all-fruit diet.
Hmm. Well, we should definitely get into what 10 foods we'd take into space or to a desert island. But now seems like a good time to get Andrew Taylor on the line and see if we can figure out how he beat the odds and managed to survive and even thrive on his all-potato diet.
So, Mango, I know today we're talking about limiting diets to 10 foods. And what would those 10 foods be if that's all we could choose? Well, today's guest took that to another level. So in 2016, Andrew Taylor was struggling with depression and anxiety, and he also weighed more than he'd ever weighed in his life, so he decided to take matters into his own hands. He took what you might call a pretty unusual measure, and that was he decided to eat nothing but potatoes for a year. I don't know if that's how you've ever decided or thought about approaching weight loss or anything like that, but Andrew Taylor, welcome to Part-Time Genius.
Thanks for having me on. I'm excited.
Yeah, we're thrilled to have you as well. So, Andrew, you said that you were addicted to food at the time, and I think I read you wanted to make your food as boring as possible so your mind wasn't consumed by food. Why did you decide on the potato?
Yeah, that's exactly right. It was an experiment, really, to see if dealing with my own food addiction through abstinence would be a helpful thing. So, you know, an alcoholic should quit alcohol. And I figured maybe a food addict should quit food. And obviously we can't quit food entirely. So I wondered if there was one food that I could eat and then quit everything else and getting as close as possible to quitting as you could. So I chose potatoes after a lot of research. I spent 6 weeks studying to figure out what would be the best food to choose, and potatoes just had the most evidence behind them, basically. Most people know about the Irish diet. For a couple of centuries, the Irish entire population ate almost only potatoes, and they maintained good fitness and health, and they actually went through a population boom, which wouldn't happen if they weren't fit and healthy. There are tribes around the world. There's the Papua New Guinean Highlander tribe to this day eat almost only sweet potatoes. And there's, you know, examples in Japan of the Okinawans getting nearly all of their calories from Japanese sweet potatoes and living, having a very high rate of centenarians. That's people that live till 100 years old. Another interesting thing was prisoners of war. I read about prisoners of war that were fed only potatoes, and they were same thing. They were in great health and in great fitness. And you know, you see photos of prisoners of war that are totally malnourished, and that's not these guys. These guys that were fed only potatoes did really, really well. And another great piece of information I found was there was a study done in the 20s, in the late 1920s. Where a marathon running couple were supervised by scientists for 6 months eating only potatoes. And again, they did really well. They maintained good fitness and health. And at the end of 6 months, they actually ran personal best marathons. So there's a lot more information that I read, but that's the best examples I can give you. And yeah, once I read all that plus a lot more, then my decision was easy. The potatoes were the obvious choice.
Wow, that's just fascinating. And clearly you did your homework on this. I am curious, were you consulting a nutritionist at all through the process?
No, I've got my personal doctor is a dietitian as well, qualified dietitian and doctor. And once I'd done all my research and made my decision and decided that that's what I wanted to do, then I went to him and basically told him what my plan was. And yeah, he agreed to supervise me and help me, but he didn't have any input in the initial planning of it, no.
And I heard you mention sweet potatoes and I think regular potatoes. Did you mix potatoes or was there just one type of potato you were eating on this diet?
I had all kinds of potatoes. Yeah, I wanted to be restrictive, but I didn't want to, like, you know, if I went to the store and they only had one kind of potato available and it wasn't the kind that I was eating, then that was going to make things hard, you know? So I just decided to make it all kinds of potatoes just for logistical reasons, that's all.
Yeah, and obviously the potato is pretty versatile to cook, but what types of meals did you make? And did your art of cooking the potato evolve as you continued on this process?
Yeah, well, like you briefly mentioned earlier, I figured that a big part of my problem with food was that I was relying on it for comfort, enjoyment, emotional support, things like that. Like at the end of a bad day, I would get home and want to try to make myself feel better by eating exciting, interesting food. So the idea was that I wanted to make my food as boring as possible so that I'd have to retrain my brain to get that comfort and enjoyment and emotional support from other areas of life rather than just from food. So for that reason, I kept it boring as possible on purpose. So 95% of my meals were probably mashed potato, baked potato, or boiled potato, all just plain. And, yeah, every now and then, maybe once a fortnight or even once a month, I would do something a little bit more interesting, like, say, make some oven-baked chips or some potato waffles or something like that. But really, it was all about learning to be happy with boring food. And I got this saying, make your food boring and your life interesting. So rather than spending my time and energy on trying to make interesting, exciting foods, I just tried to do interesting and exciting things.
That seems like a great way to approach it. I'm curious, are you still eating potatoes now that you've finished your year of only potatoes?
Yeah, I had mashed potatoes and rocket. I think you guys call it arugula, mashed potatoes and arugula for breakfast.
So, Andrew, I'm curious. I know, you know, diet experts would probably point out the lack of protein that you're getting in this diet. So I mean, what would you say to those that would be critical of the diet or be concerned that you might not be getting enough protein or you know, other essentials in your diet?
Yeah, well, there are I've had lots of input from diet experts around the world since I started doing this, and it's interesting that potatoes, I guess, have a bad rap that people think that they're lacking in so much nutrition, but they've actually, I was getting, when I was eating potatoes only, I was getting 85 to 90 grams of protein a day, which is definitely well within the recommended daily intake, and it's all the required essential amino acids getting covered. So, yeah, I find it a little bit disturbing when experts make these claims with clearly not knowing what they're talking about. And potatoes, everyone knows they've got a lot of carbohydrates, but they've also got the protein, like I mentioned. They've got a small amount of fat, which is enough to give the body what it needs, especially when you're carrying extra fat like I was. And yeah, they've got a really good balance of all the other vitamins and minerals that we need too. So, my blood tests were getting better through the whole year, and I was really getting everything I need from this diet. So, yeah, no complaints there.
So I was curious how your marriage was affected by this, and what were you spending more time on instead of just cooking and thinking about food?
Yeah, my marriage was only affected in positive ways. My wife was really supportive, and before I started this, I have no hesitation to say that I gave 100% of everything I had to being the best husband I could and being the best father I could. But I was clinically depressed and 120 pounds more than I am now, and so 100% then is not the same as 100% now. So I'm able to give more these days, which means my marriage and my life is only been affected in positive ways. Yeah, so no complaints there, and my wife was really supportive from the start. It's amazing how much time and space food takes up in your life for, thinking about it, planning it, preparing it, shopping for it, cooking it, cleaning up after it, all that. You don't realize how much time and effort and energy that all takes up until you remove it from your life, basically. So, yeah, I've added a lot into my life. I'm doing a lot more exercise, and really, I guess most of my extra time and attention has just gone into having fun with my wife and my boy. And, the time I used to spend thinking about and planning and all that, it's just spent on enjoying myself with them. I wrestle with my little boy and read books and make jokes. And, we go walking and playing at the playground. And it's just all the little things in life are just got a little bit of extra focus for me. That's it. It's hard to say that there's one particular thing. It's just across the board, I get a little bit more time for each of the more positive experiences in life. That's all.
That's wonderful.
Well, Andrew, this has just been fascinating, and congratulations on your success with this. I really admire what you've accomplished, and as you've put it before, it's not about the potato. I mean, you can check out Andrew's book, The DIY Spud Fit Challenge, on Amazon, or visit him online at spudfit.com. Andrew, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me. It's been fun, and yeah, good luck with everything you guys do.
You're listening to Part-Time Genius, and we're talking about how to get by on the least number of foods possible. Okay, Mango, so after talking to Andrew, I think we're in agreement that potatoes belong on our list of the only foods you'll ever need. What do you think about this?
Absolutely. I mean, there are 20 amino acids that humans need to survive. And while our bodies produce most of those for us, there are 9 essential acids that we only get from foods we eat. And although most foods supply at least a couple of those essential aminos, white potatoes can actually get you there in one go.
And it's funny that potatoes don't get the coveted superfood moniker like some of the others do, but I agree with you on this. I mean, they belong in the cart. And of course, white potatoes aren't enough on their own since they lack some of the much needed minerals and vitamins. You know, we think about vitamins A and E. And as Andrew points out, a true potatoarian, I guess, I don't know if that's a word, they would need to add sweet potatoes to the mix in order to survive long term.
Yeah, that sweet potato footnote really made me wonder how the Irish made it through that famine in the 1800s. Mm-hmm. Like, roughly a third of the population lived mostly on plain potatoes during those lean years, but I don't think they were farming sweet potatoes.
Yeah, I was actually curious about this as well, so I decided to do a little digging into this. And the traditional go-to meal for the Irish peasants has been potatoes, milk, oats, beans, and bread. But, by the time the famine struck, most peasants had to sell their milk supply just to make rent. so their meals dwindled to potatoes, salted fish, and oatmeal.
And that was enough to keep them going?
For the most part, it actually was. I mean, the fish would have been high in protein and calcium, plus some of the important minerals and vitamins, but the real saving grace, surprisingly, was actually the oatmeal.
Huh.
You see, even on a diet that included both white and sweet potatoes, you'd still be lacking a crucial mineral. And I have a hard time pronouncing this mineral, but it's called molybdenum.
I've never heard of it.
Nobody's heard of it, and I don't think anybody can say it. And it's often called the most important element you've never heard of. So basically, without molybdenum, your body would be unable to break down the sulfites and turn them into usable sources of energy. And since sulfites are naturally found in so many foods we eat, including potatoes, most foods would eventually kill you without it, you know, in order to take care of the sulfites. But thankfully, we really don't need all that much of the mineral. In fact, the recommended daily allowance for it is only about 45 micrograms. So a little oatmeal actually does the trick, and you just ask the Irish.
Or the Scots, for that matter. And while researching, I found that the cornerstones of a traditional Scottish diet were potatoes, oatmeal, milk, and kale. And now I'm actually thinking they all should have a place on our list.
It's a pretty great combo. I mean, you could probably get by on those four alone if you had to. Though I think you could make the case for swapping oats for barley just because it has the same essential vitamins and minerals as the other grains, but it also helps to manage those cholesterol levels.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we've got a pretty good list going here. We've got white and sweet potatoes as well as oats or barley, and now we're adding milk and kale. And of course, I'm kind of sick of hearing people talk about kale these days.
Yeah, I know what you mean on this. It does kind of live up to its reputation, though. It can help with everything from cardiovascular support to the fight against things like arthritis or asthma or diabetes, even cancer, it's been shown in some studies. Plus, it's super rich in vitamins and minerals. I know I said super, and fiber.
I know, but I feel like I'm in a kale ad.
Well, I mean, Mango, a single 100-gram serving of kale contains way more than the recommended daily allowance for, let's see here, vitamin C, vitamin A, and vitamin K. And you can order some using the coupon code kale.com/genius.
So to be clear, that's a fake coupon code.
You
we are not
that.
On the kale lobby's dole. And while kale has plenty going for it, it's not without its drawbacks.
Really? So why is that?
Well, a raw kale can be extremely tough on the digestive system. And even cooked kale can lead to hypothyroidism. That's if you eat too much of it. And all that vitamin K you mentioned, I mean, it's great in moderation, but too much can lead to the formation of blood clots. So if you're already dealing with blood clots or if you're on a blood thinning medication, you might want to sub in spinach instead.
You know, it's weird how it all gets more complicated than you think, even with something like kale. But, you know, still milk seems like a safe bet for the list. If you drink vitamin D fortified whole milk, your body's getting a lot of what it needs right there. You know, it's got carbs, protein, potassium, all the essential amino acids, and of course, as we know, calcium.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much the only things missing are fiber and apparently, oh, it's so hard for me to say,
molybdenum.
Yes, exactly. All right, so grains and greens and potatoes would still need to be on the menu to get your nutrition fixed, but it really is amazing how close any one of these foods can get you to a pretty healthy diet.
It is, and I know we already debunked the mono diet, but there actually is one food that succeeds at delivering the complete nutritional package all on its own, and that's better than an all-potato diet and way, way better than the all-chicken nugget diet.
I do like chicken nuggets, but no, I'm curious. All right, so what's this amazing mystery food?
Milk, or specifically human milk. So according to Joanne Hattner, a nutrition consultant at Stanford and former national spokesperson for the American Dietetic Association, mother's milk is a complete food. That means it's calorically sufficient and contains a little bit of all the vitamins, minerals, and amino acids that we need.
Yeah, but you're talking about for babies, though, right? Like adults couldn't survive on breast milk, could they?
Well, that's the catch. Even though all the vital nutrients are in there, they don't occur in high enough amounts to sustain an adult. In fact, that's why we ultimately add solid foods to infant diets so that we can beef up the amount of iron and other nutrients that they receive. And technically, though, anyone could survive solely on mother's milk, provided they were able to, you know, source enough of it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't think that's going to happen. Thank God.
Yeah, exactly. So our best bet is to stick to other mammal milks like cows or goats. And if the milk's fermented or, you know, like a yogurt, that's all the better because the added bacteria can do wonders for our digestive tracts.
Thank you.
Welcome back to Part-Time Genius. Now, earlier we harped on fruitarians quite a bit, so I do want to make sure we give fruit its due and include at least one on our list. Now, the problem is there's so many tasty fruits, and pretty much all of them are good for you. So I'm going to leave it to you, Mango. What's your pick?
Well, everyone knows by now that I have a soft spot for bananas, and thanks to their high levels of potassium and fiber and lack of fat or salt, they're not a bad choice. They are pretty sugary, though, and a little weak in the calorie department. For example, have you heard of this YouTube phenomena, Freely the Banana Girl?
I can't say that's on my list of YouTube channels I watch.
Yeah, she's this Australian social media darling, and she practices a mono diet of just bananas. And since the average banana only contains 100 calories or so, Freely scarfs down 50-plus bananas every day to keep her energy up.
Every day?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, so, of course, we'd be supplementing our fruit with the other things on our list, so we wouldn't have to eat quite as many. But if we're trying to stick to just one kind of fruit, there are probably better options.
Well, why don't we go the other way for a minute and maybe choose a high-calorie fruit like avocados? I mean, they have fiber and potassium like bananas do, plus vitamin E, plenty of healthy fats that help keep inflammation and cholesterol in check. They're just overall healthy.
Yeah, that definitely works. And avocados are great for breakfast or lunch or dinner, and they're more versatile than bananas, I guess. But another strong choice would be some kind of berry, and any kind, really. Blueberries and pomegranates are popular choices because they're all packed with antioxidants and tons of vitamin C. But I actually read this article in Business Insider that ranked the nutritional value of a bunch of berries. And the one that topped the list was one I never would have thought, elderberries.
Elderberry. Never would have thought. Have you ever had an elderberry?
Yeah, I have.
I actually haven't had an elderberry.
But apparently elderberries surpass their cousins in potassium and iron and fiber and also vitamin B6 and C. And the only problem is that eating too many raw ones can actually make you sick. So you'd have to cook them down into a syrup. But if you want to go with the second best berry, that happens to be the blackberry.
I have had that type of berry, and they're very good. And it's definitely easier to find blackberries, too. I'm actually not sure I've ever seen an elderberry in a grocery store. All right, so fruits, veggies, grains, starch, and dairy are covered on our list. And now we need a dedicated protein. And it's tempting to go with something like a decadent steak, but you know, anything besides an ultra lean cut is going to provide more saturated fat and cholesterol than you really want when we're trying to come up with a list like this. So, I don't know. Instead, I say we take another page from the Irish and opt for maybe surf instead of turf.
Yeah, that sounds smart. So, what are you thinking?
Well, any fish is going to offer protein and healthy fat, but you really can't do much better than salmon. Now, I know we talked about kale earlier in the greens category, and much like that, salmon has been the it thing within its category. It's been the it fish for a while now, but it's loaded with high-quality protein, not to mention vitamin B12 and minerals like potassium and selenium. You know, while salmon is a fattier fish, most of that comes from omega-3 fatty acids, and those help promote healthy brain function. They reduce joint inflammation, and they strengthen your heart.
Yeah, well, salmon's a strong pick, but in case any vegetarians are listening, we should point out a few guilt-free alternatives for protein. And thankfully, there are a ton of them, like beans, pulses, nuts, and seeds. They're all fantastic protein choices, and they're much easier to carry, store, or even prepare than animal proteins.
Assuming that you pair them appropriately to make a complete protein, like in the case of beans, pairing them with rice.
That's right.
All right, so what would you say are the best of the best for the plant-based proteins?
Well, and this might be biased, according to the Bean Institute, which apparently is a thing, beans contain between 21% and 25% protein by weight. And since that's much higher than other sources of vegetable protein, you know, the nut or seed options, I'd go with beans. And different beans pack different amounts of protein and other minerals, with black beans, kidney beans, pinto, and soy tending to provide the most. But that's the beauty of beans. No matter which one you go with, it's going to be a good source of protein and fiber. And it'll also be fat-free, sodium-free, and cholesterol-free.
Looks like beans for the win. It felt like you said beans a lot there.
Right? I did.
I do want to mention, though, that just like with eating too many fruits or something like kale, there is such a thing as too much protein. It's actually called protein poisoning, or some people call it rabbit starvation. Huh. I'd never heard of this, but just saw it in the research. And it occurs when 45% or more of your calorie intake is derived from protein. And the nickname actually has nothing to do with malnourished bunnies or anything like that. It comes from the early North American explorers who sometimes survived solely on lean proteins, such as rabbits. And this would happen for weeks at a time. And the diet often led to starvation because a person's liver, it can only process so many calories from lean proteins.
Whoa.
Yeah, so remember, no matter where you get your protein, don't overdo it. The bulk of your calories should be coming from fats and carbs and not protein.
Yeah, that's a good tip. So there you have it. There are two kinds of potatoes on our list. Oats or barley, kale or spinach, milk or yogurt, avocados or berries, and salmon or beans. And if you have extra room, maybe a package of Flaming Hot Cheetos.
Mm. Yeah, that would cover all of your nutritional bases. But again, whether you want to or even whether you should stick to a limited diet like this, that's a whole different matter, maybe for a different episode one day.
Totally. Because while it makes sense on paper that we can restrict our diets, that's not really how things play out in real life. So for example, there was a study in 2002 where researchers took data from 59,000 women and found that those who alternated 16 to 17 healthy foods through the diet had a 42% lower mortality rate than those who regularly ate between 0 to 8 healthy foods.
Huh.
So even if you're eating mostly healthy foods, like the ones we listed today, you'll still be at a disadvantage if you aren't varying what you eat.
Yeah, and that actually tracks with an article I read by a dietitian at Glasgow Caledonian University. Her name is Jenny Jackson, and she openly admits that while we know a diet that includes a variety of vegetables is healthier than eating just a few, we actually don't know exactly why that's the case. As she puts it, quote, "We don't really know which foods are causing which effects. So while you could work out exactly what you needed from macronutrients, you don't know exactly what you might be missing."
Yeah, I'd say the real strength of a thought experiment like this is that it reminds us of the practical purpose food serves. I mean, humans have evolved to value the taste of food and the experience of eating way more than any other species, which, of course, I'm grateful for. But that focus on the sensory can distract us from food's true purpose as fuel for our lives.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. And, you know, at a time when people are so wrapped up with food as a social experience or as a form of entertainment, you know, Instagramming what's on your plate or writing reviews on Yelp, it is a little sobering to think about food as this basic necessity. But picking apart the pros and cons of individual foods, it does give you a sense of not only what we're putting in our bodies, but why we're doing it.
That's definitely true. But you know one thing you can always safely consume without having to overthink it?
I'm really hoping this is not about breast milk again.
The part-time genius fact off. And what do you say, because we were both surprised by how nutritious the potato is, we turn this into the potato edition?
All right. Sounds good to me.
So according to A History of Greece, I found there's an often told story that in order to popularize potatoes in 1828, the new governor, Johnny Kapodistis, tried to give potatoes away, but the people were totally uninterested. So he placed armed guards in front of a shipment as they were loaded off docks to make them seem more important. And when the guards turned away or left their positions, people just stole the potatoes. And that's how the potatoes' popularity spread there.
Oh, wow. Well, what's strange is that it isn't the first time leaders tried to convince people to eat potatoes. According to an article in Mental Floss, quote, "In the late 1700s, in an effort to inspire their starving subjects to plant the newly introduced vegetable, Marie Antoinette wore potato flowers in her hair, and her husband, King Louis XVI, wore them in his buttonholes. And while the move launched a new fad, convincing French nobility to start wearing potato flowers, the plan didn't have the intended effect. The lower classes resented the propaganda and spurned the plant."
So did you know that potato parties used to be a thing in Japan and South Korea? Like, teenagers would go into McDonald's, order $200 or more of fries, and then just spread them out on tables to eat while they hung out.
Actually, that sounds pretty delicious to me. I want to admit that. Well, did you know that Mr. Potato Head was the first toy advertised on television?
I'd forgotten that. The craziest part to me was that you actually had to provide your own potato.
Yeah. Well, since you knew that fact, how about this one? Did you know that gardeners will sometimes put rose cuttings into a potato, then plant the potato in the ground?
Why is that?
Well, the potato's full of nutrients, so it can actually help the rose grow.
That's insane. Did you know that Gorbachev's wife once tried to impress a British minister by telling him that the Soviets had more than 300 ways to cook potatoes? And when he doubted her, she sent him a cookbook of 500 ways to cook a potato.
She showed him. All right. Well, I mean, I guess with 500 recipes from Russia alone, we don't have to worry about Penn Jillette and whether he gets his variety anymore. But all right, I think because of that fact, I'm going to let you take home the championship belt this week.
Nice.
That's it for today's Part-Time Genius. If you enjoyed the show, feel free to drop us a line on our 24/7 fact hotline. That's 1-844-PT-GENIUS. You can also send us a note, Part-Time Genius at HowStuffWorks.com, or find us on Facebook and Twitter. And if you really, really enjoyed the show, please give us a review or a rating on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Thanks so much. Thanks again for listening. Part-Time Genius is a production of How Stuff Works and wouldn't be possible without several brilliant people who do the important things we couldn't even begin to understand.
Tristan McNeil does the editing thing.
Noel Brown made the theme song and does the mixy-mixy sound thing.
Jerry Rowland does the exec producer thing.
Gabe Luzier is our lead researcher with support from the research army, including Austin Thompson, Nolan Brown, and Lucas Adams.
And Eves Jeffcoat gets the show to your ears. Good job, Eves.
If you like what you heard, we hope you'll subscribe. And if you really, really like what you've heard, maybe you could leave a good review for us.
Did we forget Jason?
Jason who?